Hey, good morning. So we're wrapping up the Enneagram this morning. I just want to go over a couple things we didn't have a lot of time to tap into, just to give you a broader picture of how complex the Enneagram really is, and then just give us a chance to kind of say, okay, so maybe I know my number, maybe I don't, maybe I know my spouses or my child's or my parents or that guy I work with, but then so what? You know, how can I make use of this knowledge to maybe become a more whole and happy person? So one of the things we want to think about are the wings, right? And we each have two wings, just like a healthy bird has two wings so we can fly. We have two wings on the Enneagram, and obviously they are the points on either side of our home base. So they're our closest neighbors, and we can drop in on them whenever we want to. We can access their characteristics as we choose. So we need to know something about those so we know when we're doing that. Because sometimes our choices are unconscious choices, right? We may go to one of those without really recognizing that we do. Most people tend to have one or the other wing as being stronger. So you're either a one with a nine wing or a one with a two wing. You could be balanced and be both, but that's not as common as having one be your go-to point. And so you go there, obviously, at your healthiest point. So if you are operating in a high developmental level, you're going to go to your wing at that high developmental level. And conversely, if you're operating at average or below average levels, that's where you're going to go. We can't flip up something higher than where we are until we get higher in our own world, okay? So we won't go through these in depth, but I'll show you how it works with a couple of them, and you can go from there. So if you're a one, somebody in the room might be a one, and you have a nine wing, you probably have a greater ability to relax and unwind without having to go on vacation, okay? You're not as uptight if you have a nine wing that predominates. You might be less reactive when you disagree, because you know that nine is kind of harmonious and goes with the flow and just laid back.
So if you're a one, you're only going to have a nine and a two wing?
Those are your wings. You're either because you sit between those two numbers.
Okay.
That's not the only numbers you're going to access, but if you're a one, you've got two wings.
And they're always
the nine and the two, because that's where you sit on the chart, right? Okay? So you're going to be more likely to solicit the opinions of others because you like that harmony. So you have a little more of that harmony in you that kind of curtails that perfectionist, I have to be right, quality of the one. If you have a two wing, you're probably going to have more generosity and be more people-focused than a one without that wing might be. And you might be a little more gregarious, a little more warm, a little more likely to be, you know, kind of seeking closeness with others, seeking to be helpful, not just standing there in judgment of that other person. So you see how being at one or the other wing could influence how you are. So we could have three ones in this room. One could be a one with a nine wing, one with a two wing, and one kind of accessing both, and you'd have three very different people, right? So you can, you know, you say to yourself, well, I know another one, and they're nothing like me. Well, your one is different from their one, probably, partly because of this, but not just because of this. So a two is going to access their one and be more balanced in their dedication to task. They're not just going to care about helping. They're also going to want to get their job done. So their job, if you're a two in college, and you want to please people, then you're writing everybody else's term papers. Okay? Because you want to make everybody happy. And guess whose term paper doesn't get written? Your own, right? But if you have a one wing, you're going to get yours done too. You may still do everybody else's term paper, but you're also going to do your own. And if you have a three wing, your two is going to be more comfortable having a little power of being successful and not always feeling that they have to be subservient to someone else in order to be liked. Stop me if I'm going too fast. I just don't want to spend a ton of time on any of this. Again, the wings with the three are the two and the four.
If you're a three with a two win, you're going to be a little more sensitive to the feelings of others, not just, let's go, let's get it done. You're going to say, oh, look, I'm leaving these people behind. Maybe I should bring them along with me. Maybe I should help them understand. With a four win, you're going to be a little more content with feelings, because remember, the three is kind of out of touch with their feelings. They're in the feeling center, but they're the least in touch with their feeling. They're the center of the center, and they're the least in touch with their feelings. So if they have a four way, they're going to be a little more in touch with their own feelings and be a little more emotionally engaged with other people, a little more able to tap into that artistic, emotional side of themselves. If you're a four, you have a three wing and a five wing. And if you have that three wing predominant, then you may be a little more action oriented, tap into that three get it done attitude. Then a four without that wing might be a little more comfortable, not always shying away, not always feeling so ambivalent. If you have a five wing, remember that's the one that goes into their head. Now you've moved into another center. So four is in the heart center, but if they access their five wing, they're moving into the head center. So then they're more able to be objective and can kind of sit back and have perspective on what's going on. Still a four, but a little nuanced. If you're a five and you have a four wing, obviously you're going to be able to be a little more emotional than a straight five is going to be. And of course, there's really no such thing as a straight five. But, you know, if you just read the five characteristics, so this five might write poetry while they're learning everything they can learn and know. If you have a six wing, then you're going to have a little more ability to be on a team and value loyalty and be a little more intuitive and insightful and engaged. Not always recluse, okay, but more loyal and able to be engaged in a group. The six with a five wing is going to be more focused and self-contained and restrained. They have more of a passion for knowledge, and they're not just worried about what's coming next and being safe, but they're also going to want to learn. And if you have a seven wing, it's sometimes said that sixes see the glass half empty and sevens see it as half full. So if you're six with a seven wing, you got the whole glass. So that's not a bad thing to be, I guess. Of course, that means you're healthy, but you would be a little more optimistic and not always think that everything's going to go wrong. Worst case scenario, the seven's going to help you kind of moderate that a little bit. Your seven, your six wing is going to help you understand situations better. See maybe that there could be a problem with what you're doing. Maybe your jokes are funny, but this maybe not the place to say them because they might be out of place in this particular group. So it might help you to think about potential problems to your gregarious party nature. There are places where a party just isn't appropriate, right? If you have the eight wing, the seven is going to be able to be more direct. Maybe they're not going to have to tell a joke to express how they feel. Maybe they're going to be able to just express it without having to make a joke about it. Kind of cover up what they really feel. If you're an eight and you have a seven wing, you may be a little more lighthearted, a little less assertive. And with the nine wing, you're going to be a little calmer and a little less reactive. Because remember, the eight is the one that takes over the room and it can be very assertive and sees what should be done and wants to do it. Justice is their key. And for the nine with an eight wing, you're going to have a little more ability to take charge. You're strong in the eight wing, you might be able to really make quick decisions and even face opposition. Be a little more assertive, not be as afraid of conflict. And if you have a one wing, you could be a little more attentive to detail. Maybe you'd get there on time. Maybe you would stick with a task and stay focused and not just sit there, dock on the bay, just walk. Okay. So that's the wings, real quick, all right? You could spend time looking at how that affects everybody, but think about that in your own number, the number on either side of you, which way do you tend to
kind of instinctively, automatically go when you're reacting to a situation. Conversely, which way would you like to go? So that you can access your neighbor. If there's something you'd like to change about yourself, grow about yourself, you can look at those wings and see if that's not an easy place for you to go to access some of those traits that you'd like to see in yourself. Then there's the directions that we can go in. Some of this is above my theoretical level, but I've tried to bring it down to where I can understand it. You could probably go a lot higher than I can. But first, there's the law of three. And the 9, the 6, and the 3 on the Enneagram make up the law of three, because remember, they are connected with a triangle. We'll see it in a minute when I bring up the diagram. But the triangle in the diagram points to the 3, the 6, and the 9. And this inner triangle illustrates the law of three, which shows up in both regular religious and secular contexts. So for Christians, the law of three speaks to the Trinity, right? In secular terms, it speaks to the thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis. So the three says, let's go! The six says, oh, wait a minute, I don't think so, let's not. Let's think about it. And the nine says, well, maybe. I'm sure we can find a way to work this out. Okay, so you have the go, the stop, and the caution. The holy yes, some people call it the holy no, and the holy maybe. Okay? So that's that direction that the 9, the 6, and the 3 take. Then there's the law of the 7, which is what the other numbers add up to. There's 7 other things that we do. If you divide 1, which is unity, by the number 7, which is also wholeness, right? 7 days in a week. 7 is often, in biblical terms, a symbol for wholeness. When something happens 7 times, it's kind of the whole. Okay? So those lines of the Enneagram go with that. When we divide 1 by 7, we get the decimal that continuously repeats 1, 4, 2, 8, 5, 7, 1, 4, 2, 8, 5, 7, 1, 4, 2, 8, 5, 7. And the lines of the Enneagram go in that progression. So the personality types 1, 2, 1, 4, 2, 8, 5, and 7 move back and forth along those lines under different internal conditions. So the 9 through 6 move in their lines, and the 1, 4, 2, 8, 5, 7 move in their lines. Okay. So one direction is where you go when you're in stress, or when you need to resource something else to get through a bad situation. We go there when we're under stress, or when we want to access the competencies of that other number in order to help us get through a stressful time. So it's either called the resource point or the stress point. Resource point is just a more positive way of looking at moving to that number. The other direction we go to is when we're relaxed or in integrity or dealing with our heart. It's a good place to be. And when we travel in this direction, we move to inhabit a personality type that's considered to be valuable. We consider it to be valuable to help us grow. So we're feeling great, everything's going along, we're safe, we're secure, and so we access this number to help us grow, to help us build on ourselves, to become more available, to just be a more whole person. So, in stress, the 3 goes to the 9, the 9 goes to the 6, the 6 goes to the 3, and the 3 goes to the 9, the 9 goes to the 6, so you see it continues in stress. If I am 3 and I'm stressed out, I'm going to go access behaviors of the 9, characteristics of the 9 that are going to help me minimize my stress, deal with that stress. If I'm a 9 and I'm under stress, I'm going to pick up characteristics of the 6. I'm going to become more cautious, maybe, and more analytical about things. I'm not just going to be laid back and, okay, whatever. I'm going to do this. May not be good for me. I got to look at this. I got to examine this. If I'm under stress, I'm going to go to 6. If I'm a 6 and I'm under stress, I'm going to go to 3 and pick up some characteristics of that success-oriented, goal-driven person to get out of my maybe my stress of being a six and just feeling like, I can't do anything because everything is going to go wrong. And okay, let me go be a three, and I'll just do it. Okay, it'll give me a little more strength after. Likewise, the one will go to the four. The four will go to the two will go to the eight, the eight will go to the five will go to the seven will go to the one. Oh. Continues to repeat, okay? In relaxation, we go the opposite direction. So now the three is going to go to the six, and the six is going to go to the nine, and the nine is going to go to the three. So the nine, when they're relaxed, are going to pick up all the great characteristics of the three. Okay? So you move around the Enneagram. See, by the time you move around and hit all your directions and all your wings, you can really access all the numbers just by moving through that process and trying to become more and more of each of the good characteristics of each number. And there's the diagram. I tried to make it as big as I could so you could see it. So the arrows show where you go in stress. So in stress, the 9 goes to the 6, the 6 goes to the 3, and the 3 goes to the 9. In stress, the 1 goes to the 4 goes to the 2, the 2 goes to the 3, see the, there it goes. And then reverse order when you're in integrity, or when you're resourceful, or when you're feeling good.
But when you're stressed, so you get help from the...
You access that other one to get help.
When you're relaxed, is it just like traits?
It's an opportunity to grow.
Okay.
You choose to access those qualities that you think will make you a more well-rounded person. Yeah.
What triggers you to go from one to the other?
Stress.
Okay. So
will make you go.
I mean, what's the trigger point to say, okay, now I must go from here to here to really?
Honestly, it's not. I say it. I automatically do it. Okay, it's not that I say, I'm a nine, I think I'll go access my six. If I'm in stress, I'm going to the six automatically, not thinking about it.
Okay.
Conversely, when I'm doing well, if I'm aware of myself, then I could choose to go to the three. I'm more likely to choose when I'm not in stress than when I'm in stress.
I was just thinking, sometimes you just wallow in one place.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yes.
I wondered what triggers you to get out.
Probably of it. That's causing you more discomfort than trying to move.
Okay.
When you're wallowing in your threeness and it's not working, or you're wallowing in your sixness or your fiveness and it's not working for you, and you're feeling very stressed out and very uncomfortable, you've got to go somewhere. And you don't like where you're going. It doesn't feel any more comfortable, but you're going to go there because you got it yourself. Okay, that's kind of the idea behind it.
But if you're like at a low level, you automatically go to the low level reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Being aware of this process would raise your sights.
Yes. Part of this whole reason for studying is so that wherever you're at, you can become aware of what you do automatically because of your ego, because you're trying to protect yourself. You've got all these layers of behaviors that are all trying to make yourself okay because you're afraid of the real you. And so the more you become aware of what you automatically do, the more you can let go of some of that and let the real you come through. Because the realness of any of these numbers is beautiful. It's an image of God. And that's what we want to get to. And the other numbers can help us image that goodness of God that we have. Okay? And again, you can see how if you're an eight and you don't feel like you're like this other person who's an eight, well, maybe she's an eight who's accessing their stress point at the moment, and you're not. And so they're acting differently. You're both in the same situation, but you're behaving quite differently because one is more stressed out than the other in this particular situation. Okay. I know it's kind of complicated. And it's not so much that you have to remember all this, just to be aware that this isn't a flat, I'm an eight and that's all I am. But we're very complex human beings, and the Enneagram acknowledges the complexity.
Then there's the subtypes. Not to make it any more difficult. The subtypes are our basic biological survival drives, that's supposed to say. We're not just greedy. So we're either a self-preservation, a social, or a sexual being. Sexual doesn't just mean sex. It means seeking intimacy or relationships are most important. Like one-to-one fusion or one-to-one relationships. If you're social, your primary drive is social settings, to be part of a group, to belong to something. And if you're a self-preservation person, your primary concern is taking care of yourself, getting your biological, material, physical needs met. That's where you start. So these are the places that we start from, no matter what our number. Forget the numbers, we're all one of those three primarily. Then we're a second, secondarily, and then the third one kind of takes up the rear.
Is this all part of the Enneagram?
Yeah, well, it's separate from the Enneagram, but the Enneagram has brought it in as another part of understanding how we operate.
Well,
to
answer something before that, you said that, you know, as you study this, you understand what your number is, and probably what your spouse and your children. I mean, I'm barely getting mine. How long does it take you to where you can identify that this is my husband's number and this is my kid's number?
It takes a long time. I mean, okay. If you really care to study it, just getting your own number under control. And then remember, if you try to figure out your husband's, only he can figure out his number.
Yeah.
So you can make some predictions, but you can't be sure.
Yeah.
You know. So we're playing with that with all these, huh?
Give him the link,
let him tell you what he is. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, we know our spouses, we know our children pretty well. So we could probably make a better guess of theirs than we can, you know, some of those celebrities that we put up there. But they exhibit behaviors that kind of look like the behavior of a particular number, so we throw them in there. We really have to say, so, Hillary Clinton, what are you? For us to really be sure she's a one. She might say, oh no, I'm a five. You just don't know that. How hard is this to me? I really would rather sit in my room and read books. Well, never worth thought. Okay. But these three are underlying it all. Okay? So think about yourself. Where are your primary concerns? What is it that really instinctively you want? Do you instinctively want to be sure that you're okay? That you're taken care of? That you're going to survive this day? And that's what worries you the most or controls you the most? Are you social, and is it most important that you belong to something, that you be part of something bigger than yourself, that you know that you're part of something, that you belong to a social group or a community, that isolation is something that you fear? Or are you a sexual person? Are you primarily interested in intimate relationships, that one best friend, that one person that you can be real with and who can be real with you? And is it critically important that you have that one person, and you're out of whack, and you don't have it, okay? We're one of those three, primarily, secondarily, we're another one, and then the third one comes along for the ride. Not that we don't have it, but it just doesn't drive us the way it
needs to.
It can, I think, but primarily we are one of those.
Well, I was thinking about self-preservation. I watched my father as he got older, and I think this with a lot of people as they age, they worry about if they're going to outlive their money, or if they're going to have enough, or if they're going to have a place to live if something goes wrong. So the self-preservation piece gets more and more and more important.
Yes.
At the cost, maybe that's not the right word, of the others.
Mm-hmm.
You would move away from
them. That makes sense. I think most people who study this say that if you're doing that when you were older, and that's a big primary concern for you, it probably always was at least a secondary concern for you, but now it's heightened because your situation is such that you have less and less control over making that happen.
And things are narrowing.
Yes, things are narrowing, and you don't have the ability to preserve or to have the people to surround you who are going to take care of you. You know, some self-preservation people never grow up because they always want mommy or daddy take care of them. And so you may know some adults who are still relying on their parents for their income. You know, they still live at home, they still borrow from their parents and never pay back, they still are totally or somewhat dependent on their parents for their life. They may be self-preservation types who just can't cut the apron strings and be independent because they're too worried about whether or not they'll be able to survive on their own. They don't have that confidence that they can survive on their own. Yes? So you can be a self-preserving one, a social one, or a sexual one.
On any number.
And so that's another way in which each number differs within itself. So if you're a one self-preservation, you're going to look a lot different than a sexual one or a social one is going to look. But you're all ones, but that underlying instinct is affecting how your oneness is experienced by yourself and by others. So here's the complexity. Do a little math. Each type or lens has three subtypes. So a nine, you can be a nine self-preservationist, a nine social, or a nine sexual, right? So those three times the nine numbers on the Enneagram, now you have 27 possible personality types, right? Not just nine, but now there's a wheel of 27, not a wheel of nine. So that's not all. Then you add the two wings that each one can be. So you can be a nine self-preservation with a one wing, or you can be a nine self-preservation with an eight wing, you can be a nine self-preservation with a balance of the two. Four, and so on. Nine social with a one, nine social with an eight, nine social with a one. So now those nine possible combinations have come to be 81. Now there's 81 numbers on the end. But we're not done yet, are we? That's not all. Now, you add in where you go in your direction. Which direction are you going in? So, if you're a nine in stress, going to your six, but your self-preservation is one, you're going to do that differently than a nine in stress, going to your six, whose self-preservation is eight. Was going to be different than a nine going to their six stress if their self-preservation is balanced wing. See that? Now we have 162 possible.
How about a two confused?
Yes. But that's not all. That's not all. Because then you have a new point in your nine levels of development. And I didn't even do that. The screen wouldn't fit at all. Okay, so you can be all of those things at one of nine different levels. So multiply each of those by 9 and then 9 again, and you get a really high number of the number of ways in which we live our lives. So it's not a one-dimensional thing. It's complicated,
yeah.
And we are complex human beings. And then if you start with a tri-type, I'm not a 9, I'm a 9-5-6, or a 9-4-6. And then you do all the wings, because now you've got a 9, two wings for the 9, two wings for the 4, and two wings for the 6, multiply, and you go into the thousands of potential. You can do more. So that's the Enneagram. We started simple. What's your number? What center are you in? What's your stance? What's your outlook? And we looked at those three things, but there's so much more. That's why I love Enneagram, because you never done. So the question that I think I'd like to just take the next 10 minutes or so is just to think about, for all of us, what difference do you think this will make? You've come to at least one or two of these sessions, you've possibly taken a test and learned your number. How do you think you'll use it? How might it make you more of the person that God created you to be? Because that's the only reason is to try to become more of who God intends us to be. So what do you think? What have you learned? How will you use it? How have you already used it?
Yeah. I think this is one of those things that helps you take judgment and some judgment. I don't know that we can all get rid of total judgment, but I think it takes some judgment. judgment out of things, because you begin to see, well, people, this is my type, and this is who I am, and I can offer it this way, and this is your type. We aren't the same, so I don't need to judge you for operating within your type. And I think we start looking at people differently as we look at ourselves and know ourselves better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so great to be able to release some of that judgment and just live.
Good.
Your
life. Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I think that's a huge way Enneagram helps me, just to allow others to be different and not think that if I see the world this way, so does everybody else. Sometimes that's an amazing aha moment when you realize that someone else can walk into a room and not be scared to death.
And you're not trying to change other people.
No, that's right.
Especially, I think that helps in your own family.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had known it more when my kids were smaller, but I can sure use it now with my grandson. Because
mm-hmm.
you aren't trying, you're just letting them be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it takes a different way of communicating when you're just letting people be.
Yeah, you're about, might ask more questions than be more destructive. How do you see that? What do you think? As opposed to, here's what you should think, or here's how to see that situation. Anybody else have any other thoughts? How you might integrate this into your work life, your home life, your family?
Personal growth.
Uh-huh.
Really, people are so tired, and that, you know, sort of having nebulous views about, you know, stress, what you should be doing, or this or that, but it doesn't really fit you, or it doesn't really work, or it doesn't really come naturally. And I think I would go back now and sort of look to see, based on my type, you know, what other alternatives I should give a try.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially
the growth. Yeah, kind of gives you choices of how you want to behave when you're aware.
And relationships, like anything, marriage or whatever. I think it's just like, well, really taking it on and really find it to be really extremely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really sorry to have messed up some of these classes.
Yeah.
It's a period of cycle, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know it helps me when I can catch myself being on the average end of the nine when I would like to operate in the higher level, you know. And so I know that the nine tends to be passive aggressive when they're not happy. And I can catch myself doing that, you know. When my husband doesn't go along with where I want to go for a restaurant, I don't have to mope around and just be, you know, like put on a sad face and just walk around and say, oh no, it's fine. I don't have a chance. It didn't really matter to me where we went anyway.
If that's what you want.
If that's what you want, we'll do it.
Yeah.
I can say, honey, that's fine, that's what you want, but I would really like to have gone to a Chinese restaurant. So if we go where you want to go tonight, next week, can we go where I want to go?
Right.
That's a whole lot healthier, isn't it? Fine, we'll go where you want to go. Or even saying it nicely, look where you want to go, and on the inside, you always give it away. Whatever it is that I might be feeling. So I can recognize it, I can say, oh, there you go. And choose to wallow in it. Maybe be some days I'll just choose to stay there and do it. You know, I will say I always move up top. Sometimes I can say, yeah, that's right, I do feel that way, and take it. But sometimes I can move up and say, oh no, that's what I don't want to be. And so prayer can help me do that, you know.
Yeah.
I can be conscious in my prayer life of those things that I want to change, and then maybe tap into that grace that gives me the strength to change it. Yeah, I shouldn't close quite that much. My goal is when you don't do something I want to do.
Examples are helpful.
Yeah. Anybody else catch themselves?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah?
Yeah, a lot of state. This whole year has been a year of transformation for me, especially in the last 3 months. So the help of having taken that understanding of where I'm starting, you always know where you're going, you just know where you started.
Mm-hmm.
You always operate, you never examine where you've been, you can't know where then you're going. So, and then choose to say, I can, I don't have to just stick on this one path. There are other paths. There are other, you know, resource points we can access.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, originally I was like, well, I'm all over the place. Well, I'm not really all over the place. I'm starting here. Mm-hmm. But I can pull from here, here, and here in those areas.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can go through this. I want to help and I immediately want to assist to, hey, and seeing how that becomes into the eight, becoming a leader. Like, let me serve as a greater type of servant.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's about and just everyday things. And knowing that I'm okay. There's nothing wrong with me. This is how, you know, if I'm being able to operate on that personal growth level, that higher level. Sorry, I'm talking low again. I'm working on that. Being able to access those other points allows me to come up, to reach a higher level and more reach exactly who God really wants me to be and who He made me to be in the first place. And knowing that I don't have to access, you know, more of the negative or shadow sides, I can pull up and pull away from, and pull other aspects of things I want to be, but I'm not always really. Yes. Did everyone hear that? I'm good. Progress has been made.
It's had me thinking about a set of foster parents I worked with once, long, long time ago, and it wasn't related to the Enneagram, but I think Enneagram kind of allows us to even explicitly tell people who we are if we need to in certain circumstances. And what these parents did, they fostered very difficult kids, and they did a kind of brilliant job of it. They had a real expertise. But they were both kind of mourning people and people who had a very good understanding of who they were. And so they would have this very frank conversation when a new child joined their home, and it was humorous, but they would say, we commit to you that from 6 a.m. to 8:30 p.m., we are going to be just about the best foster parents you've ever lived with, and our consequences are going to be clear, and our rules and structure, and we're going to be open to the feedback that you have for us. And about 8:31, you're going to start getting real basic foster parenting around here, and we're going to keep you safe, and nothing bad is going to happen, but it's not going to be the quality you get the rest of the day. And the kids responded so positively to this, even kids with huge amounts of trauma and difficulty. And as I've thought about what it means to know yourself better through the Enneagram process, I thought, you know, they really modeled something that I'd like to figure out how to do more of in my own life, to be able to say, you know, I'm working on these things, here's who I am, but at 8:31, you're going to start getting the basic me, or even
well,
the...
Well, when I'm in a crowd, probably I'll, you know, I'm not unfriendly, but when I'm in certain situations, I'm probably not going to talk that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not because I don't like you, it's because when I'm surrounded by a whole bunch of people, I kind of withdraw.
Yeah.
I know it, and now you know it,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have to think that I'm mad at you.
Or like you could, like, they could example that that's, you know, you can understand your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you understand how you reacted to this a little better.
Yeah, and I can
choose. It's great self-awareness.
Well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to look like I'm antisocial.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to work really hard when I'm in those big social situations to seek out a couple people I can talk to and feel comfortable with, so I'm not just sitting there like a bump on a log and looking like I wish I weren't here. I do wish I weren't here, but I gotta look like I'm not. I am here, you know. I don't like these cocktail parties. I don't like cocktail parties, and I would rather be anywhere else but one. But I did come to one, so now I can't sit there with a drink in my hand looking like I'm mad at the world. I've gotta go talk to, at least go talk to Steve, you know, so I look like I'm happy, you know, and I know him, so I can talk to him, but I don't know this person over here. So I'm not going to go up to this stranger because that's too far out of my comfort zone. But I can go over here because I know this person. You know, so I'm going to seek that out and sort of gingerly enter the situation. You know, and you put me in a pastor situation where I'm on Sunday morning, I have to shake hands with 100 people, many of whom I don't know, and, you know, give them my one-on-one attention. I did it. It wasn't easy, because that's not easy for a nine,
But I loved doing it because there was other parts of who I am that captured. But I did go home every Sunday afternoon and take a nap.
Right.
Because I was exhausted by it. Because I had to work so hard to not be the wallflower and withdraw. I had to work really hard to be out there. You know? And I did it, and I enjoyed doing it. But it wasn't something that came. I had to tap into my eight, but I had to work hard to tap into it. Because it wasn't, I would tend to go to the one. I had to go to the eight in the situation, right? Mm-hmm. And figure out how to be that outgoing, assertive person.
But in the end, it made you happy.
Yes, it made me a fuller person. Because I can do it now with more ease than I could, 11 years ago, 12 years ago when I started.
Because in time.
Yeah. I could teach my high school students all day, but don't ask me to go teach a bunch of adults. Preach.
Yeah.
That would, scare the heck out of me.
Yeah.
But teaching kids, that was fine. I had no problem.
Yeah.
It put me in a situation with peers, and I was, just scared to death. Then I had to go preach. But I loved it. I learned a lot. I loved it from the beginning. It was what I wanted to do, but it was still hard. And so I had to tap into other aspects of who I could be. And I imagine you all could talk about times when you really had to be something that was not as comfortable just because you wanted to do this. This thing mattered to you. You wanted to do it, so you had to step out. Be somebody you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I think knowledge of the Enneagram helps us know we're doing it because of free choice, and we can work on it better when we can figure it out. Yeah,
there's something wrong with you.
Uh-huh.
And you're thinking, this is it, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I think I should quit.
Yeah. Lower level stuff of your number that you just doesn't work for you anymore. You don't want to hold on to it, so you can let it go. You peel that layer of the onion away and say, I'm done with that. It's not going to control me anymore.
That's
part of
the
old
baggage.
Pardon?
That's part of the old
baggage. Yes. All those layers are a lot of baggage that we carry
this
around.
This is the kind of stuff that I always hated. Hated these tests to find out what I was and what I was and what I really didn't like it, but this has been really great fun.
Good. Yeah.
I like it. It's more academic.
Well, but it's safe.
Uh-huh.
And so you can find out some things and admit to them and about yourself,
mm-hmm.
but you're still safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's been a real revelation for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay to be whatever number you are.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I think this iteration through the Enneagram has a much better feeling for who I am and what skills are driven by what I really am.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two.
Yeah.
And, I have a new lady friend and I immediately said, oh, I know she's a three.
Now you're not so sure. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. But you can see yourself being a two, and you can enjoy those beautiful aspects. A two, and just relish them, and be happy in them. That's beautiful.
And if I give somebody something and they don't pat me on the back, and say, well, okay, that's them, that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. And doesn't have to be you.
Yeah.
And you're not a lesser person because you're not. You have to compare yourself to someone else, like Linda was saying. We are each unique in one of our 2,533 permutations. Being in the Enneagram.
Glad you got to that number.
Just made that one up. I'll make it over tomorrow. All right, well, thank you. Remember, there's no class next week, but come to the Advent workshop. And then the following week, we'll have to be in here because Father Casey is using the parlor for his class, I think, through Christmas. So we'll be in here, but we'll put the chairs in a circle. If I should not be here, somebody put the chairs in a circle. And I think the first time, we were just going to kind of share traditions, holiday joys and traditions that mean a lot to us, either those that we still keep or those that we remember.
from a different time in our lives that we still reflect on and remember during this time of year. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about.
Are you going to